time now is 3 o'clock, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO FM on Wednesday, August 7th. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. Today on the show, we'll learn about the upcoming Technically Art workshops. Marjorie Hamburger from the City Museum will be here to highlight their Juno Explore program. We'll get a preview of this Saturday's Midsummer Vocal Workshop concert, and hopefully we'll talk to KXLL's Annie Bartholomew about tomorrow night's concert at Centennial Hall. That, Writer's Almanac, music and more on a Juno Afternoon on KTOO FM.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Human rights experts and First Nations leaders are pushing the Canadian government to recognize that the country's historical treatment of its Native people constituted genocide. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The discussion is being led by three high-profile Canadians: Phil Fontaine, the former National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Bernie Farber, former Executive Director of the Canadian Jewish Congress, and Michael Dan, a former neurosurgeon turned philanthropist. They've been talking with First Nations leaders about the need for Canada to admit that its actions amounted to genocide, and they could ask the United Nations within a few months to apply the definition of genocide to Canada's historical record. Here's Bernie Farber.
The way that we have treated Canada's First Nations is abominable. Currently, what we need to do now is engage in a national conversation. Let's get it all out. Let's start discussing this. Let's have an open discussion, because really, you know, time will heal wounds, but we have to face up to our history before we can even begin to heal.
The UN defines genocide as the intent to destroy a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group by killings, causing them serious mental or physical harm, subjecting them to unsustainable living conditions, preventing the birth of children, or forcibly transferring their children to another group. The government says it recognizes there were dark chapters in the country's relationship with First Nations and has apologized for the residential school era. Some Native leaders say they hope the government does not force them to pursue the issue in the courts or at the UN. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Nez Perce tribal leaders were among more than a dozen people arrested Tuesday. Demonstrators gathered near the tribal casino in Lewiston, Idaho. As Will Robbins reports, they were protesting a shipment of equipment headed to Canadian oil sands.
Nez Perce officials said its members are prepared to be arrested for assembling to stop the loads, which would travel through the tribe's reservation and ancestral homelands, as well as a federally designated wild and scenic river corridor. Then early Tuesday, as the first megaload was coming through, Nez Perce tribal leaders and others formed a line across Idaho's Highway 12, temporarily stopping the shipment in its tracks. Silas Whitman is the chairman of the Nez Perce tribe and one of more than a dozen who were arrested.
I don't look at this as a symbolic issue. Otherwise, we'd just issue a press statement, put up a few signs, and just let it go. No, it just, we've run out of time and initiatives. So that leaves us with disobedience, civil disobedience.
In the coming days, at least 10 more similar-sized loads await approval from the Idaho Department of Transportation. The Nez Perce have appealed to the U.S. Forest Service, who told the IDT they can't support an application for a massive shipment until a complete review of the tribe's concerns can be addressed. For National Native News, I'm Will Robbins.
The United Nations is marking International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples on August 9th by highlighting treaties. Events will take place at the UN headquarters in New York, including remarks by Indigenous people. Hundreds of rowers and horseback riders are expected to arrive Friday morning after traveling to the event to honor a treaty made 400 years ago between Dutch immigrants and the Six Nations. To coincide with the UN Day, the National Congress of American Indians and Google are hosting an Indigenous Mapping Day. People across the country can participate in a map-up. According to NCAI, many tribal communities in the U.S. lack accurate mapping information, like roads, buildings, and information on public services. The map-up allows people to add details to Google Maps about their community, including adding tribal names and languages. During this month in 2012, a grand opening ceremony was held for Frog Bay Tribal National Park in Wisconsin. The Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa opened the park after buying nearly 90 acres of privately owned land. The area includes a stretch of sandy beach along Lake Superior and forest trails. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now in the studio we have Kathleen Harper and Bo Anderson to talk about the Technically Art Workshops. Welcome, Bo and Kathleen.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so as I was mentioning before, I don't know anything about these workshops, and I don't actually know either of you either. So before we start about the workshops, can you introduce yourselves and tell me how you're involved with these workshops?
Certainly. I'll go ahead and start. I'm Kathleen Harper, and I'm the production manager and company manager over at Perseverance Theater. These workshops, I'm involved as a staff member of Perseverance Theater. These workshops are a collaboration between the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, Perseverance Theater, and community schools. I will be teaching stage management workshops. As something that I have some experience in and background in, and try and get more people excited about it in the community. So,
cool. Yeah.
And I am Bo Anderson. I am Community Schools Auditorium Manager, and next year I'll be running both JDHS Auditorium and Thunder Mountain High School's Auditorium. And as a result, we started working together with Community Schools, Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, who does a lot of renting in the auditoriums and needs crew a lot of times, and then Perseverance Theater, who also has crew and stage management and general all-around tech needs. And a lot of people don't know a lot about the tech theater world, so we're partnering to try and do some just community outreach and training and get more volunteers who know more and more and maybe take more and more of these sort of classes. And we're basically planning on hopefully doing this twice a year, like once over the summer and then once maybe around Christmas break when the auditoriums aren't that busy, so we can really dig into the equipment and pull stuff out and not have to worry about rebuilding it really fast or anything.
Okay, so what you're talking about, Bo, are these Technically Art Workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can we just delve right in and tell me generally what are these workshops?
So it's a free set of training opportunities. We got together, the group of us, Juneau Arts and Humanities and Perseverance and Community Schools, and said, well, what are some needs that we see coming up in the communities in the future in terms of the arts? And most of the time when people think of the arts, they think of sort of like the front side of things in terms of, you know, acting or performing or doing all this sort of thing. But there's all of these things that need to happen in the background to support these events happening in our community. Everything from the people actually producing the events to the people helping run all of the different parts of it, which is kind of what a stage manager does, to the people backstage who are running the curtains or running the follow spots or doing all that kind of stuff, to the people who are taking your ticket or handing you your program or selling you your ticket at the front of the door. And there are a lot of people we have in the community that do have this sort of experience, having worked a lot of our Juneau Arts Group's things. And we also encourage those people to come out to these workshops and share their experiences and share their knowledge as well. But there's also a lot of people who often say, well, I want to get involved, and how do I do that, and what are some ways that I can get involved? So this we're offering this as sort of a way to get people who have a lot of experience to bring that experience to the table and say, here are the things that I've learned producing events in this town or being an usher in this town or, you know, working backstage in this town. Or for the people who are like, I really want to learn this stuff. How do you become a stage crew? What does that mean? I would love to do it, but I don't know, you know, what do you need to do to run a curtain, or what do you need to do to set up sound, or, any of that sort of thing, or what is a stage manager? What do they do? You know, sounds interesting, but I have no idea what kind of commitment that would be or what that would require. So this is an opportunity for people to jump in, share with each other, and learn. So, yeah.
What are the dates? Like, when do these workshops start?
The first one will start Friday night, and then it'll be Saturday for most of the day, and then sort of a Sunday afternoon finishing up on a couple of things. And we've got it blocked out in blocks on the JAC website, jhc.org. It's on the main page. You can find technically art, and then it'll just take you through a bunch of links, and you'll eventually see the schedule of events. And we've scheduled it out, so if you wanted to go crazy and take absolutely everything, there's enough repeated sessions of everything to where you could go in depth as far as we were going to be able to get on lighting over the weekend, and take the stage crew and take stage management and do a lot of the production stuff with Nancy and Kari. And yeah.
So it's coming up this weekend.
Yep.
This
Friday
weekend,
night,
yes. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And as Bo said, if people want to check out exactly when the events are happening, they can go to jahc.org, and there's a full blocked out kind of schedule
rubric. Very nice
and visually laid out. And also a registration form, so people can go ahead. And we're trying to encourage people to sign up ahead of time so that those of us teaching those things, such as Bo and myself, can kind of get a sense of how many people we're going to have per session and kind of get prepared for that. So.
Okay, so how many experts do we have as teachers for this?
The teachers are basically, I will be teaching a stage management two sessions, sort of an overview and then digging into the details sort of session. Bo will be teaching...
I'll be teaching sort of the first one is just basically backstage crew, but the first session is sort of an orientation, anywhere people kind of are interested in going backstage, showing them everything, basic operation of curtains, maybe flying in an actual pipe and then showing how the kind of magic works technically, showing where the doors are, showing if you're volunteering, where do you show up and who do you talk to and where to look for things, and as far as we can go. And then the second session will be a lot more technical stuff. We'll probably plug in a microphone and make it work. We'll probably plug in a light and show you how to turn it on. We'll probably rig a flat to a pipe and fly it in and out and just learn the technical elements at their most basic. But once you've learned the basic, you can apply it in very, very complicated ways to do everything else you want it to do. But most people don't have the basic. So, and then...
Right. And just now you were throwing out a lot of technical terms that most people probably don't know. No, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's good. It kind of you know, people can be like, what are those words? Let me find out. These workshops seem like they're very important, specifically for Juno, because we do have so many performing arts events. We have theater, we have verbal arts, we have play. Like, there's just a lot going on here.
There is, yeah. And there's also the two other sections that are going on. Kari and Nancy over at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council are going to be doing a whole series on sort of what we call front of house, which is everything from ticket takers and ushers and box office and concessions and how do you do those things. And for people who do know them, they're also going to be trying to talk through some, you know, what do you do when an emergency comes up? What happened? How are the ways to handle if somebody suddenly has a heart attack in the audience? You know, that's not always something that you know, as a volunteer come saying, oh, I'm going to go to this show and it's going to be great and I'm going to take tickets. And then, you know, if an emergency happens, how do you deal with that and come prepared and have the tools to do that as well? And then a very special thing, too, is Art Roach, who's the artistic director of Perseverance Theater, will be teaching a three-day lighting workshop, which is kind of like lighting for anybody, for anybody who's interested in sort of demystifying how lighting in the theater works. And he's got it broken down into three segments where he'll be teaching about the design process, how do you look at a script and even start to think about how it might be lit, and then how do you then take these ideas and turn it into a plan, and then from there also then what are the lights and how do you work with them and what do they do and what are the things that you can do and can't do with lights. So that's something that may or may not be taught again in the future. So that's definitely for those people who are really, really interested in lights. I highly recommend doing that.
And that's a three-segment workshop?
That's a three-segment workshop,
and you'd have
yes.
to go to each and every one.
You don't have to go to each and every one. If you're just interested in being a what we call a theater electrician or something like that, somebody who hangs lights and points them and puts the color in them or whatever, you could just take the final workshop. But if you're, you know, say a director or somebody like that who works in our community and you want to learn more about, well, what is a lighting designer even thinking when I'm talking to them, then maybe just the first segment would be really interesting for you. So you can kind of mix and match what you take. And then if you're like, I really want to know everything there is to know about lighting, then it would behoove you to take all three kind of deal. So,
okay. And we have like lots of performing art venues in this town, the different high schools, different theaters. Are the skills that people will learn at these workshops kind of universal to the different spaces?
Yeah, definitely the terms are all the same, and a lot of it works the same way. It's just probably not in the same area, like the control booth where all the lighting boards and sound boards will always be in a different place, but they almost all operate in the exact same way. And the lights are pretty much the same lights. They might be a newer, different brand or something, but pointing them the same way works the same, and putting the lights in them works the same way, and bolting them to a pipe works the same. And so a lot of the tech elements are the same. It'll just, the venue changes, but a lot of the theater elements are always the same.
Okay.
And it'll, generically help you, theater people talk, like you're saying, we throw out these terms and we don't realize not everybody knows what a flat is or what upstage is. Somebody just like, what is up? And they they look up, but we mean, furthest away from the audience when we say upstage. We don't even think of that because it's just secondhand knowledge
right.
that we've used for years.
So these workshops seem like it's going to be a really great opportunity for people to learn how to volunteer throughout the year because there's so many functions. And I'm sure people are like, I want to get involved.
Well, and something to just throw out there as well is that they're – some of these positions are paid positions, too. Mm. At Perseverance Theater, we pay our stage managers, and we're always looking. I'm always desperate to find more people who want to stage manage in this town. And that's, something that you can make a nice little chunk of change for the time that you have to spend in the rehearsals. And I know in terms of, I believe the Juno Arts and Humanities Council is looking into trying to pay backstage crew to work the events that they're going to be putting on. So you could get paid to run a follow spot for a concert that comes into town or draw the curtains for them or whatever.
That's true.
So, it's not ever going to be anything huge, but for those who are looking for something fun to do and maybe a little pocket change, that's another thing that's kind of cool, too.
Okay, so it seems like there's going to be a lot of folks and professionals and experts sharing their skills. Mm-hmm. Do these workshops cost money?
No, they are absolutely free, which
free
is great.
To the public so that we can garner interest, garner support, and get contact info so that we can be then email like, hey, this opportunity is coming up. And
that's, would you be interested?
Would you be interested in stage managing? Would you be interested in stage crewing? Would you be interested in helping Perseverance hang their lights for the next show kind of a thing?
Is part of the issue, too, with all the different arts groups is, you may have these really cool opportunities, but if you don't know who to even try and contact to say, hey, come out, we need this help, then it's very hard. You can just throw things out into the air and hope somebody lands in your lap, and it might not happen. But if we start building sort of a together as a community, a list of people, these are the people who they've taken this, they know their basics in stage crew, they want to help out with these backstage events, and then all the different arts groups can access that and say, oh, great, cool, we're going to contact the crew list, or the stage management list, or this person's taken lighting, so we're really desperate for a lighting designer. They might know basics now and, could help out or whatever. So it's, the idea is to keep deepening our community of artists and keep really sort of inspiring people to learn more about all the different sides of what it takes to put on art events.
Okay, so let's kind of give the basic information. If people are interested, they should go to the website.
Mm-hmm.
JAHC.org.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a phone number they can call?
They could probably call the Arts Council. I don't have the Arts Council's phone number, but it should be in the phone book.
Call, go to the website. And what time do they start tomorrow night?
Oh, Friday night.
Friday night.
Friday night
is the first session of lighting and one of the sessions of crew orientation, and that's 6:30 to 8:30.
Okay.
And Saturday there are events starting at 9 and going all the way till, I think, about 6 o'clock. But again, people can pick and choose the sessions that they're most interested in. And then on Sunday, there's events going from about 10 until like 1:30, I think, or 2, like 1:40 maybe.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
2 o'clock.
Folks who are interested, they should go on jhc.org, check out the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
People don't have to do all of them. They can pick and choose which ones they want to go to.
Absolutely.
It's free.
It's free.
And if you're interested in joining the arts community but may not be an artist or a performer, this is a great way to do it.
Exactly.
Okay. So thank you so much, Kathleen and Beau, for coming today.
Thank you.
These sound really exciting.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Up next, we have Writer's Almanac, followed by Marjorie Hamburger from the City Museum will be here to talk about the Juno Explorer program.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 7th of August, 2013. It's the birthday of anthropologist Louis Leakey, born in Kenya in 1903. He studied anthropology at Cambridge at a time when most anthropologists believed that human beings had originated in Asia. But Leakey had read Darwin's theory that human beings might have originated in Africa because Africa is the home of our closest relatives, chimpanzees and gorillas. As soon as he graduated from Cambridge, he moved back to Africa to prove Darwin right. In 1948, Leakey and his wife found one of the earliest fossil ape skulls ever discovered. It was between 25 and 40 million years old. It is now believed to be the skull of the ancestor of all large primates, including humans. It was on this day in 1934 that the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that the novel Ulysses by James Joyce was not obscene. It had been banned in the United States in 1920, and though it was a big seller on the black market and Joyce knew he was losing a lot of money to pirate publishers, the only way to fight the ban was to provoke the government into a new obscenity trial. So, in 1933, Random House decided to import a single version of the French edition of Ulysses. It was a hot day, and the U.S. customs inspector didn't want to be bothered with another inspection, but the Random House people made sure that one book was seized. Random House and Joyce appealed, and the judge, John Woolsey, ruled that it was not pornographic. In his opinion, Judge Woolsey wrote, "In respect of the recurrent emergence of the theme of sex in the minds of its characters, it must always be remembered that his locale was Celtic and his season spring." And here's a poem by Stuart Dishel entitled Plans. She plans to be a writer one day and live in the city of Paris, where she will describe the sun as it rises over Bouchemont. Today the dawn began in small pieces. Sharp wedges of light broke through the clouds. She plans to write better than this and is critic enough to know sharp wedges sounds like cheese. She plans to live alone in a place that has a terrace where she will drink strong coffee at a round white table. Her terrace will be her cafe, and she will be recognized by the blue-smocked workers of the neighborhood, the concierges, the locals at the comptoir of the tabac down the block, and the girl under the green cross of the apothecary shop. She plans to love her apartment, where she will keep just one flower in a blue vase. She already loves the word apartment, whose halves please her when she sees them breaking the line in her journal. She plans to learn the roots of French and English words and will search them out as if she were hunting skulls in the catacombs. On her walls, she'll hang a timetable of the great events of Western history. She will read the same 20 books as Chaucer. Every morning, she will make up stories. She looks around her Brighton room, at the walls, the ceiling, the round knob of the rectangular door. She listens to the voices of the neighbor's children. A toilet flushes, then the tamp of cigarette on steel, the flint flash of her roommate's boyfriend's lighter. When she leaves, she plans to leave alone, and every article she will carry, each shoe, will be important. Like an architect, she will plan this life, as once the fortune in her cookie told her. Picture what you wish to become, if you wish to become that picture. Plans, a poem by Stuart Dishel from his collection Good Hope Road, published by Viking, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions are available at poetryfoundation.org. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Lisa Fu, your host for today. And right now we have Marjorie Hamburger in the studio with us. She's from the City Museum, and we're going to hear about the Juno Explorer Program. Welcome, Marjorie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, can you tell me what your involvement is at the museum and with this program?
Well, I'm new at the museum, although many people out there know me from other incarnations, but my job there is curator of public programs. So I'm very excited to figure out what ways we can get the community involved in the museum and in the history of Juno. And so some of the kinds of things I do are what I'm going to do next week, which is to do programs for in this case, children. To explore Juno and to learn about our history.
Okay, great. So the Juno Explorer Program, tell us what that's about.
Well, every afternoon next week, Monday through Friday, kids ages 8 to 11, although I'm willing to consider a little bit younger, a little bit older, if that's going to work out for the kid, will come and join me for the afternoon from 12:30 to 4:30. And each day we have a different theme. Unofficially, I'm calling it 5,000 years in Juno. So I want us to explore everything from way back to the formation of our landscape through, ice and the glaciers and all that geology stuff, you know, all the way up to present day and examining the different people who come through here and either passed through or stayed or what so forth. So each day we have a little bit of a different focus along that path of 5,000 years. Kids can join me for the whole week, or they can pick and choose a day that interests them. Okay, if I run through some of the days?
Yes, please,
yeah, okay.
Go for it.
So Monday, we're going to be focusing on the Tlingit people and the indigenous people of this area. And our travels will take us to the City Museum, where we have some wonderful artifacts. And the fish trap is what interests me the most that's there. And then we'll go to the State Museum as well and be hosted there to see some wonderful exhibits that they've also got on Ravenstail weaving. And a really cool one is this one called Rainforest Warriors, where they have this body armor.
Wow.
So that's pretty interesting that Tommy Joseph has recreated the traditional style of making that. So we're going to be doing that kind of stuff on Monday. On Tuesday, we're going to catch gold fever, and we're going to go out to the AJ Mine, AJ Mine Gasino Mill Tour. Jerry and Bev Harmon are going to host us out there, and we're going to get to I haven't actually been on that tour myself, so I'm super excited. But it's down Thane, if people know where that is. And I think we get to actually go in a tunnel, and we definitely get to pan for gold. And so that's going to be our focus, is the whole mining and gold fever thing. On Wednesday, we are going to wander around downtown and visit various places like the Filipino Community Hall. And we're going to go up to the library and look out the window with Mark Whitman, who's going to help us imagine what life was like in the 1800s and how Juno was different then. And we're going to learn a lot of stories. He's a great storyteller. If people know Mark Whitman, we're going to learn stories about people who've made an imprint here. Thursday, we're going to go to the glacier, and that's where we're going to study the geology. And I've got a professor from the university who's going to come with us, Sonia Nagorski, and we're going to study rocks and learn about ice and how that makes a landscape and so forth. And we're going to do some hiking on that day.
Wow.
And then Friday, we're going to kind of wrap it all up, and we're going to think about our own place in history and about how right now history is continuing to be created all the time. And we're going to end up making a book of our own that the kids are going to create, and they're going to hand bind and cover and have a product to take home where they think about how was Juno then and how is it now and what it might be like in the future.
Wow.
the way you're talking about these programs, I wish I was between the ages of 8 and 12 so I can do these. This sounds spectacular.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
And it really does seem like it's a really general big picture of Juno and what it encompasses.
Exactly. That was kind of what I had in mind when I was putting it together. And then our community is so rich with resources of people who are really excited to support, you know, the kids learning about this kind of stuff. So I'm really pleased with all the people who are going to participate. I should probably say a little bit about cost and schedule, if that's
sure,
okay.
Sure, yes.
So people can go to the website, the City Museum's website, and get all this information. And do I have that on here? Yes. So we're at www.juno.org/parkrec/museum/classes, or they can just call the museum at 586-3572, and we can either steer them that way or send them an email and get them linked up with that. And then you can find all this information and the registration forms and so forth, or come into the museum and get hard copies. So kids, if you want to do that for the whole week, it would be $180 for the whole week. That includes snack. And or if you want to pick and choose a day, $36 per day. And so there's that option, too, if that works better for somebody or if a kid's just interested in one or two of those events, that would work fine, too. It goes from next week, so that's the 12th through the 16th. We're going to run from 12:30 to 4:30 each day, and the pickup and the drop-off will be at the museum. And embedded in their time, you know, I understand kids, so there'll be time to play and have snacks and, you know, just enjoy each other. And if the weather's like this, so much the better.
This seems like you guys are going to be walking around town a lot.
Mm-hmm.
How will transportation be provided, or is it all walking?
No, two of the days we're going to go on a bus. So out to the glacier, we've got a bus organized that will take us back and forth there.
And that's
all included in the price. And then on the mining tour day also, Princess Tours is going to take us up there to meet up there. And I guess there's a windy little road apparently that only certain kinds of vehicles can travel, so we've got that organized, but that's all included. So there will be those 2 days when we will be on a bus, and the other days we'll be on foot, you know, the day we're going to the museum, the days we're walking around town. And then, as I said, Friday will be kind of more centered around the museum and mm-hmm. be a little bit more artsy, crafty, and writing and drawing and photographing and working on this book project with you know, some little playtime in there built in. So,
usually kids' history, they may not be so interested, but it sounds like you guys have approached it to make it very fun.
Right, right. I tried to think, you know, of course, what would interest kids and, you know, the style of, you know, just reading a thing on the wall, a little bit maybe more mature, or, you know, it can only last for so long. That doesn't last for a whole week. But to really get out there and be really hands-on mm-hmm. and exploratory and, you know, also see what kind of questions the kids have, what kind of interests they have. We can kind of, you know, go in the direction that the group wants if something, you know, out of the glacier, for example, if we want to spend more time in the visitor center, or if we want to, you know, hike, or if we want to go into really depth about each and every little flake of stone, we can do that. So we'll see what kind of interest the kids have and try and accommodate that.
Okay, and so what sorts of children should be signing up for this?
You know, anybody who thinks that this would be fun. I mean, obviously, so last week before school goes mm-hmm. back, maybe some parents are a little bit pulling their hair out of like, what am I going to do? They're ready for them to go back, so send them to me. So it might be those kinds of kids. Kids who like to go out and do field trip. I mean, it's definitely going to be very active, and we're going to walk. And as I said, like the glacier day, we're going to hike all the way out to the waterfall. Wow. So hopefully, you know, kids who like to be active would, mm-hmm. would. And then kids who have a lot of questions want to know about the place that they live in and the people, you know, what are some of the names? Why is the street named the way it is? Where does that come from? We're going to find out some of that kind of stuff. One thing that's going to be exciting for me, this is something that interests me, but some of the things we're going to look at on Monday when we do focus on the Tlingit people is this a particular way of weaving and twining is the same system that you use to make a fish trap, to make a piece of body armor, and to take to make a raven's tail robe. And it's the same technology. And I don't know, for some reason that just tickles me. That seems really interesting to me, that you can use the same way of joining things together to make all those different kinds of objects in your life. And I also think it's exciting that those things still work today.
Right.
You know, you can still catch a fish with that fish trap that was made, you know, thousands of years ago. So it's not like some of our technology today that, you know,
yes,
5 years you got to get a new computer because this one doesn't can't update it anymore. You know, so you know, kids who think that kind of stuff is interesting, you know, would do well to join me on those explorations.
Okay, and then so people need to pre-register.
That would be great, yep. And like I said, they can go to our website. They can call us, 586-3572, to get a little bit more information or to be steered toward our website or get hard copies. And so, yeah, pre-registration, I mean, yeah, it just helps me to plan better. And if we start to get full, you know, I would hate to turn somebody away.
Okay.
So that would be great. The sooner the better. But it starts on Monday, so...
Sign up soon.
The museum is open Saturdays and Sundays, too. Right now in the summer, open 7 days a week. So, you know, if you don't get in by Friday, get in on Saturday, get in on Sunday. In fact, I'll be at the museum on Sunday, so I'll be there to see stuff.
Thank you so much, Marjorie, for that wonderful description of the Juno Explorer program. Starts Monday. Mm-hmm. Parents, it's the last week before school starts.
Right.
Get those minds stimulated again.
Right.
Get them thinking. This sounds like there's lots of activities, lots of crafts, lots of opportunities to grow.
Right.
So I think it sounds great. Go to the website.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to say that again?
Sure.
www.juno.org/parkrec/museum. That'll get you there. And then on the homepage there's a link to the page with the registration materials.
Okay. So up next, we're going to have a musical break followed by this Saturday's Midsummer Vocal Workshop Concert. We have Lena Simmons here and Byron McGilvray. So stay tuned for that. listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Byron McGillivray and Lena Simmons in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you two are here to talk about this Saturday's Midsummer Vocal Workshop Concert. So can you both just introduce yourselves and tell me how you're involved in this concert?
Well, Lena's the producer, and we've been doing this for 25 years, almost 24 years. This
okay.
is our 24th one. And I've been coming for 24 years. And so it's a workshop that we started with and did two pieces. And we've gone all the way to now that we've done major works like Elijah, Carmina Burana. We've done Brahms' Requiem, Mozart's Requiem. So it's grown tremendously in those last 24 years. So we have 25 coming up.
And wow. this summer we're doing the Vivaldi Gloria.
Wow.
Which is, you know, 18th century with strings. And it's just, it's a fun piece to sing. So, and I think it's fun to listen to too, but it's a fun piece to sing because it's very energetic and very bouncy in places. And
it was composed in 1715. Vivaldi was born in 1678. Died in 1741, and Scarlatti, Handel, and Bach were born in 1685. So they were, their product was contemporaneous. They were composing at the same time, although Bach was lesser known in his time. So it's that Baroque quality coming out of Venice.
Okay. Why did you choose this piece?
Vivaldi's one of the... fell out of favor in the 19th century and early 20th century and has just come back into his own. And this is his most famous vocal work. The most famous work that people will know him by is this Four Seasons. But we chose this. We hadn't done it. It's very sprightly. It's lively. Interestingly enough, he was a priest, and he wrote this piece for the Ospedale della Pietà, the hospital of the Virgin, which was a hospital for girls, not a, really a hospital. It was an orphanage for abandoned girls.
Abandoned high-class girls, but let's make that clear.
And
they got a great education,
uh-huh.
and he was a violinist, and so he taught music and composed for the girls and composed some pretty interesting music.
And this piece was one of those.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So... And he's a very, very popular composer. He wrote over 400 concerti. He was an incredible violinist. In fact, was responsible for the development of vibrato on string instruments.
Okay, what does that mean? I'm sorry.
When you take the hand, the fingers on the instrument, and they move the hand, the finger back and forth to create a tiny bit of a wavering of the pitch.
Okay.
And he was responsible for that. Earlier, Monteverdi in the same city did what we call pizzicato, which is plucking the string rather than bowing it on stringed instruments.
So Venice has, you know, major contribution to the world of music. And the Vivaldi is just, like I said before, the Vivaldi's fun. It's 12 movements. There's women's solos, because after all, it was written for it was originally, I think, SSA, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then got made into, added the men in, you know, on a later date. But the solos are all for women, and it's always exciting to sing with an orchestra. And we've got 5 string players who are going to be joining us, and that, I think, the singers are especially very excited about, because it's a whole different ball of wax singing with the strings than it is just singing with the piano, because the piano is such a percussive instrument and the strings are just this lovely, you know, legato sound. And I have a feeling we'll have a few train wrecks in our first rehearsal with the strings, but, you know, it'll come.
How many singers are there?
48?
Yeah, 48, about 50. We have a lot of our singers and a lot of very good singers who are away on the Scotland trips.
Right.
We have two groups out, and one leaves Friday, and then
one's already gone
and is probably performing today
okay.
In Scotland. So, and a lot of our singers are there. So
We're a smaller group than normal.
I see. Normally you have...
Actually, we've had as many as 99.
Oh, my gosh.
Which makes logistics of where to sing interesting, because no place has totally a large enough area to put us.
Other than in high schools.
Yeah.
So where is the concert?
Northern Light.
Okay.
And starts at 7:30 Saturday night. And tickets are available at the usual outlets, you know. And you can go to our website, or you can go to the Jack website, or you can go to Hearthside Books, or you can buy them at the door, you know. But we're gonna crowd the chancel area at Northern Light. We'll be a little close up and familiar with each other. But
so this Saturday's concert is a culmination of 2 weeks of
right.
work.
Correct.
Which doesn't seem like a lot of time.
It isn't.
It isn't. In fact, we had planned on doing another large piece to go along with this, and discovered that our eyes were bigger than our stomach. And it didn't. We were going to do Morton Lauronson's Lux Aeterna, which is a 20th century piece by someone who's actually still alive, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't quite gel enough to do the whole thing. But we'll be doing one movement from it. And we're working now on scheduling when we can just do a workshop just to do the Lauronson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the Gloria, how long is that?
29 minutes. And then we have other things filling in. We're going to do Mozart's famous Ave Verum Corpus. We'll do that with the strings.
Oh.
We're going to be doing several other things. And so it's all sacred. Concert is all sacred music. But some of it will be things that people know.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it will be things that they've not heard. But they'll go away with a great appreciation, because I think that I know that this is a very audience pleasing concert of quality music, and a lot of things they will be able to hum
mm-hmm.
As they go away. And Sir John Barbarolli said that great music is that enters the ear with great ease and leaves the mind with great difficulty. Bad music is that it enters the ear with great difficulty and leaves the memory with great ease. So we're going to deal with the former on this concert.
It sounds like it. Byron, where do you travel from?
Texas.
Okay.
I was head of the vocal department at San Francisco State for 25 years. So we started, I was doing a thing in Fairbanks, and some people from here
mm-hmm.
came and saw me and asked that we start something here. They did that 25 years ago now, and so this is our 24th one. And so I come out of Texas now. I've moved there.
So the group of singers that you work with, are these the same group of singers that you work with each time you're here?
Lena has been with me every time.
Uh-huh.
Sandra Strantman has been with me every time. I think that those are the only two left. But yes, a lot of repeat singers, but we have a lot of new ones every time. And the other thing that this workshop has done, we've very often done either a basic or intermediate vocal workshop, that is training workshop. And we have people who are singing with JLO, with a symphony, who started their first singing experiences, came out of those workshops. So
amazing.
More than the concerts the gratifications in watching the growth of the people who are going to be filling these roles. If you don't keep feeding and training, then the people who have that expertise, as they get older, they're going to cease doing this, and then it's not going to be done. So for me, that is a bigger gratification. I'm a performer. I love it. I love the conducting. But as far as the longevity and the contribution to our art, I think that those training things are, those training sessions that we've had over all these years are probably my legacy if I leave one.
Yeah, we've got people who are soloing with the symphony and with the opera who came to the beginning voice class 20 years ago, not even thinking that they could sing. We've got people in the Vivaldi workshop, this workshop. We've got high schoolers, which is exciting because we have to replace ourselves.
Right.
We have to. You know, if you take a look at a group and it's all gray-haired, you've got some problems. And
hey,
Well, I dye mine so you can't see it, you know. But you do have to re-energize every generation so that they come out and to teach them that all music is good. And, you know, it's just, it's different. Country is different from bluegrass, which is different than pop rock, which is different than a Broadway soundtrack, which is different from the Vivaldi, which is different from the Mozart, you know. And it's all good, and you should learn how to do it as best as you can.
Wow. Someone else asked Count Basie one time about classical music, about the quality of music, and specifically, you know, what do you think about classical music? And he said, well, there are only two kinds of music, good and bad. And I don't think he was talking about the genre. I think he's talking about the product.
Right.
And that's true. But these are very, very, I think that music of quality has a heritage. That is, it is going to live. It either has lived or it's going to live. In 100 years, they will be doing that, singing this music. They're going to be singing Vivaldi in 100 years, and they're going to be singing Lauridsen in 100 years, and they're going to be doing Mozart in 100 years. And that is the true test of what greatness really is, because the music has to reach the people. There has to be something in the music that touches those spots inside us that can't be reached by grunts or whistles or alphabets or words or anything else. There has to be something greater than we are that reaches that emotional content.
Well, thank you so much, Byron. Thank you, Lena, for coming in today.
Thanks for letting us be here.
Yeah.
The concert's this Saturday.
Saturday night, 7:30, Northern Light.
People should show up.
Just show up. There'll be tickets at the doors. You can buy tickets ahead, tickets at the door.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Mm-hmm,
thank you.
Listening to Vivaldi Gloria, which is going to be performed this weekend, Saturday night, for the Midsummer Vocal Workshop Concert. Right now, we have Annie Bartholomew here for Juno Afternoon. Welcome, Annie.
Welcome.
How are you today?
I'm doing excellent. I just got back from the STAR program at Perseverance Theater.
So
a lot of great things happening this week.
Yes, as always in Juno. So this Saturday, those are another concert going on?
No, it's tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. It's tomorrow. Trampled by Turtles, really cool band from Duluth, Minnesota, coming to Juno, coming to perform at Centennial Hall.
Okay, so why don't we just listen to one of their songs instead of trying to explain what the music is. We're going to listen to, what's the song called?
Sounds Like a Movie. We'll be right back.
We're listening to Sounds Like a Movie by Trampled with Turtles.
Trampled by Turtles. And, I know, they're quirky.
And they're going to be here tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night at Centennial Hall. It's actually a beer raiser for Excellent Radio, sponsored by Karen and KTOO. The guys from the Pint-Sized Bus, if you're familiar with that business, actually got them down here. They've been touring Alaska, just did Salmon Stock in Inilchik, and now they're in Haines performing tonight. And then taking the ferry in tomorrow and straight to Centennial Hall stage.
Cool. Okay, and how much are tickets?
So they're $21 if you buy them online as a pre-sale. It's kind of tricky. You go to pintsizebus.com, and there will be a black or orange poster that says, buy tickets here, click here. And you have to click on it several times. So if it's not working out the first time, don't get discouraged. Keep clicking. I've had a lot of people who have had problems with it, but it's worth it. It's $4 cheaper if you buy it online, and you can pick up those tickets tomorrow at 7. Look for the pint-sized bus. It's this like little black bus, and that's where Will Call's located. Doors open at 8. It's going to be a blast. They're a high-energy, alternative bluegrass band, but they're so much more than bluegrass. They play lots of cool covers, just really great stuff.
Yeah, this sounds like a really great show tomorrow night. 21 beforehand.
25 at the door.
Which is still a really good price.
It's a really good price for what you're getting, and it's an all-ages event, too. So I know a lot of my friends who aren't 21 saw them at Haines last year, were like totally brokenhearted that they weren't going to be able to see them, and now they can. So bring your kids, bring your family, bring your dancing shoes, dancing room only.
Oh, awesome.
That's what's on the poster.
And there's going to be refreshments.
Well, there's going to be beer.
Yeah. Okay.
And wine and a bar by the Rendezvous. So,
okay.
Yeah,
great.
Big thanks to Alaskan Brewing Company for helping us raise a buck.
Thank you so much, Annie, for joining us today, telling us about Trampled by Turtles. They'll be here tomorrow night, concert, Centennial Hall. Be there.
We're
going to play another song. This one is called Gasoline.
One, two, three, one. You said my heart was broken. Your dreams make you lie.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in on K201 AM 88.1. 220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9, and Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873, or also online at www.ktoo.org. I'm Lisa Fu. Next up is All Things Considered.